This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Shug McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, ready to bring you yet another great story in the world of thoroughbred racing. Another trainer who is just getting started with their career. I'll tell you more about that as we move throughout the program here today. As always, you are tuned in to Trainer Talk live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, or you're listening to our free live streaming or the archived podcast of the show on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, today's guest is just getting started with that career. She has saddled, five horses to date, but we are recording the show. Keep this in mind. Recording on February 17th. You are listening to it now on the 24th. So there's a good chance that between the 17th and the 24th, she saddles another horse or two. But she picked up her very first career winner back on January 27th at Tampa Bay Downs. And Survey was the name of the horse, an Irish bred who rolled to a four-length win in a maiden claiming event under Jesus Castanon at odds of 7-2. I can imagine she may still be on cloud nine all these days later. Rachel Keithan is her name, and she is with me now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Rachel, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much.
Congrats on that big win. Are you still sitting on cloud nine, or have you kind of come off of the high a little bit?
Absolutely. I mean, it was a big win for the horse. He'd run a bunch of times, and he'd never actually gotten up and performed, and he ran big for us that day. But, you know, you move forward and you always have another goal in mind. You know, you take just a minute to celebrate, and then after that minute's over, you look for the next spot.
How did you celebrate after that first win?
I went to eat sushi, I got a bottle of sake, and then I went to sleep about 7 o'clock that night.
The life of a horse trainer. It's funny because we talk about this on the program a lot. You have to be back at work at, what, 5 o'clock the next morning? So you don't get a lot of time to go out partying. If you're lucky. What time do you show up at the barn?
Actually, where I am right now, I live in the barn because I really don't want to be too far from all of my children. So I normally wake up about 4:30, and we're on farm life right now, so everybody except for the racehorses are living a pretty relaxed life while they're getting their career started.
You live in the barn, so you don't leave the facility and go to your house or an apartment. You are staying, what, in the tack room?
No, there's an apartment attached to the barn.
Okay, I was going to say, that's dedication if you're, and I have had other trainers on this show that told me they, when they were getting started, they crashed in a tack room.
I'm just a little bit luckier than that.
Well, you refer to the horses as your children. How many horses do you have under your care right now?
Right now, there's 19 in the barn.
Wow. Wow, that's a big number for somebody just getting started.
You know, I've been blessed. Once I let some people know that I was going to be going out on my own, they were all too happy to throw me. Mostly babies. Babies I do well with. I'm pretty good at conditioning a baby without giving it any major problems. And then, you know, put a good foundation on it. And then when it gets to the track, they're very professional and they're put together the right way.
I love the way you refer to them as your children, because I often say that a horse trainer is a coach. And when you talk about, say, a college basketball coach, for example, the kids become their players almost become like their children. They become a family. Is that the way you view your job as a horse trainer and the horses that you have in your care?
Absolutely. They change from day to day. They're just like people. You know, one could come in from the field after having a really big day of playing, or they also can read the overnight, so they start to snot if they see themselves in the entries. They tell you everything that you want to know. If they're ready to move on and go on to something bigger and train a little harder, they tell you. If they're not ready to be doing as much as you're doing and you're pushing too far, you know, they also ask you to step back from them. I have a little bit of a luxury right now that the facility that I'm at, we are able to do things a lot differently. So I've got a pretty nice setup of horses, and they're all, unfortunately, not going to be ready right away, but they're going to be ready in time. And quite a few of these two-year-olds will be running in their two-year-old year. You know, knock on wood that everything keeps going the direction it's going right now.
Tell me more about the farm that you're living on now.
Well, I live in a two-bedroom apartment that is attached to the barn. The facility is beautiful. We've got Eurosizers here. We've got round pens. We've got turnout paddocks. There's a mild track it's really well maintained, along with a turf course, which I haven't had the pleasure of being over the turf course yet, because I prefer to get them ready on the dirt. This facility has also got a VitaFloor. It's got a spa. There's several swimming pools that we can swim the horses in. I mean, it's really luxury training here.
Yeah, it sounds like a beautiful place to let a horse grow up and get to learn what it means to be a racehorse. What's the name of the farm, and where is it located, Rachel?
It's called Big Lick Farm, but the gates actually say Oak Ridge Training Center. It's located in Morrison, Florida. And like I said, these guys are so accommodating. It's Reed and Sarah Nagel's farm, and they really help us to do the best we can for these young animals.
How far is Morrison from Tampa Bay Downs?
It's about 2 hours. It's a two-hour trip.
So when you ran survey there on the 27th, did you commute back and forth and ship in?
We had to, yeah. We actually had a friend of ours take us privately. You know, that way there's less commotion. The horse gets to be in a nice, quiet environment, just so he's relaxed. You know, he had done it several times before, so he knew a little bit what to expect. And you just want to create the kindest environment for them to run potentially the best race of their life.
Well, I want to talk more about that day and that race and that moment when Survey crossed the finish line, and we'll do that as we move throughout the program, visiting with Rachel Keithan here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. She is, if you're just joining us, just getting started with her career, saddled her first winner in Survey back on January 27th at Tampa Bay Downs. Rachel, where did the whole interest in horse racing begin for you?
Wow. I've been riding horses since I was 5. I started breaking and riding horses at 11, and those were mostly like ponies and show ponies. But I had the fortune of knowing a trainer's son in Maryland, and his name was Richard Butts. He had trained out of Charlestown, and I had a little bit of an interest. But my show jumping coach had told me I'm to stay away from the racetrack. I went on and, you know, I went to college and I did what everybody else did, and I went and got an office job, and I worked in an office job for a while, and then I just missed being outside and having sunshine on my face all day. So I had asked this trainer if they could get me in to a racetrack. I thought I could ride racehorses. And it's not a really friendly, accommodating world when you first begin. So I had some really good people take me under their wing and teach me the ropes, and I just the biggest let me rephrase this. The best way that I got around each day was following one piece of advice. It was to keep my mouth shut, my head down, and work hard. And that's where I am right now.
You say that when you first went to the racetrack, it's not a friendly, accommodating world. Why do you say that?
It's really hard to get started just because so many people try to come to the racetrack, especially coming from my discipline. People see a little girl who rode show horses, and that little girl's confident that she can ride race horses, but it's really a completely different machine. It's not the same. It's really not the same, and it was a big learning curve. But if you're willing to stick through it, the ones that have my kind of background, they're the most accommodating with the horses. We understand how the horse anatomy works, whereas if I had just started completely from scratch on the racetrack, sometimes the riders don't have the same education, and you don't get the same quality of a rider.
Did you get a chance to ride in a race?
It's really what makes the horse. If you don't have a great team behind you, backing you up, you're not going to be successful. If you don't have great exercise riders, how am I supposed to know what the horse is doing? I can see things, but I don't know exactly how the horse is doing. If the groom and the hot walkers, everybody that puts their hands on that horse, if they don't know what they're talking about, I, as a trainer, can't do what's best for the horse. And then there's also the assistants who put their hands on those horses just as much as we do, and they sometimes know the horses better than the trainers do. So I'm really fortunate that I have a pretty great team behind me, and my assistant she's hands down. I have a broken ankle at the moment, and she's really stepped up her game and been there and done everything possible for this team.
Yeah, did you ever get a chance to ride in a race when you went to the racetrack for the first time?
I did. I rode a couple of amateur races. I was really not good, so I kind of stalled that idea very quickly.
Well, you mentioned it's a team effort. There's no doubt about it, and you have found that out quickly in your training career. You mentioned your assistant. Tell me more about your team and your assistant.
Well, right now my assistant is Brittany Stoddard, and she also came from Maryland, and she has a very, very varied background. She has worked in steeplechase. She was also with Dickie Short, who is a legendary trainer in Maryland, and Dickie Smalls, and he's, mm-hmm. I mean, he was really well known. She got her major start from Dickie, and the gentleman who taught me how to ride also used to be his race rider. So she was in Maryland, and then she went to, I believe she went to Fair Hill. And just recently, the trainers that I know she's worked for are Tom Proctor. She worked for Tom Proctor for several years, and she just left Kenny McPeak. She was with Kenny McPeak when Swiss Skydiver won the Preakness, and I managed to steal her away.
Wow. How'd you end up getting her away from Kenny McPeak?
But you know, you talk sweetly and you wink.
It worked. Hey, why not? You do what you have to do, right?
You got to do whatever it takes. You know, if you don't build a good team, there's no way to really go forward.
It is so true. It takes a village, right? Is what the saying
Absolutely.
Says. And you now have somebody working alongside of you that has, as you referenced, the experience of working with a guy like Dickie Small and somebody like Ken McPeak. How important is it for you, Rachel, to surround yourself with people that, you know, have as much experience as you, maybe even more experience, if you're going to move yourself forward?
I mean, it's key. Without it, I can probably go to a certain point, but we keep each other pretty, we keep each other in check. You know, there's some things that she'll tell me, you know, hey, you're doing this wrong. And sometimes I have to step back and say, you know what, you're right. That is not the right step. So we've got to go this way. And she's really good. And there's times where I'm like, hey, Britt, we got to do things this way. And she's like, well, I don't agree with it, but okay. And we go forward with it. And it turns out to be, you know, most of the time we're pretty reasonable with each other. We've got to be a little hard-headed in order to get points across sometimes, but that everybody has to be, because if you're not and you don't think about the decisions you make, you don't exactly get as far with the horse as you possibly could have gone.
What's the biggest lesson that you have learned so far, Rachel, since going out on your own, that maybe you didn't know if you were going to have to deal with this, but now you are, and it's something that you learned from, and you're moving forward?
The biggest lesson I have had to deal with is my time management. Personally, I love babies. I do. That's probably my strong suit, but I love the claiming game. That's where I'd like to be. Everybody wants their good stake horse, but I really find a lot of pleasure in claiming a horse that maybe somebody had mismanaged, or maybe they just didn't get along with it. And I like to find all the niches for this horse and the perfect way to train it. I'm having a hard time right now juggling this really hectic schedule, getting all these horses trained into the track and I'm looking at several different tracks, you know, when I'm looking at horses to claim. So it's a lot of management as far as sitting down and actually looking through all the PPs and watching replays and things of that nature. It's hard for me to set aside that time, because when I do set aside that time, something always comes up. You know, you've got to deal with blacksmiths, you've got to deal with farriers, you've got owner phone calls. It's all something that I didn't have to do before. I just kind of would leisurely take videos and talk to owners that the trainers asked me to. But for the most part, I didn't have to do any of that myself. So the time management's been the hardest part for me. The horses,
I guess,
they come naturally.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess delegating too, right? And knowing when you can turn something over to somebody else to take it off your plate.
that's another one that's very hard for me to do.
Yeah, but I think it just has to do with being new. I really do. I think eventually you learn that. You learn that there are people there that are very capable of doing the job if you just stay out of their way, you know? And I think that's just something that every new trainer goes through.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's very hard to... Because I was always very accountable, so I've just been in the business long enough to see so many people say, hey, you know, I'm going to be here at such and such time. You've got my word. It's a commitment. And then they just don't follow through with it. So I don't really leave much room for error there. If it doesn't happen, you know, I just roll with it. Just do things myself. That's something I definitely could work on.
Well, that's what, you know, being a trainer is all about, and getting started. You learn those lessons and you move forward from them. How about the claiming game? Why is it that you like the claiming game so much?
Oh, I've just had so much fun and so been really successful with it. You saw that I had been with Danny Gargan, and he really taught me how to look through these, how to look through the PPs and look at what horses would work for his barn and what he likes and what he doesn't like. We always had difference of opinions, which horses I thought were going to be good ones and which one weren't going to be good ones. But it was a lot of fun to go through and look at these horses and look at their past performances and watch some replays and go, you know what? I think that horse would do better doing this. Let's see if we can make it work. And we had a lot of success doing it. It was fun. It's always fun to take our picture.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reward, right, for all your hard work. And here's Danny Gargan, who has trained, 330-some-odd winners to begin his career. He's had great stakes horses like, you know, Tax and Our Free Roll and Divine Miss Gray. But what kind of teacher was Danny Gargan? What are some of the lessons you learned from him that you're applying today?
The best thing he ever taught me was my first year with him. I was at Palmetto's with him, and I'm very optimistic in life. Everything is, we can do something a little differently to make the horse perform a little differently. But the best thing that he ever taught me was do not make excuses. If the horse is not fast enough to be a maiden special weight horse, that doesn't mean it's useless. It just means that it's not good enough to be in that spot. You have to pick the right spot and don't make excuses. If it doesn't work there, you've got to find a place for it to work. That was the best thing that he taught me.
When did you decide that it was time to go out on your own? Was it right from Danny to training on your own?
No. I actually went off to work for Stanley Huff for a little bit. I left Danny right after the 2019 Saratoga meet. I was actually the one that dropped the slip on Tax. Danny was at the sale, and he asked me to go look at Tax as he walked over in the races, and I dropped the slip on Tax, and we had a really successful year with him, obviously, going on to the Derby, and then he ran fourth in the Belmont, and it was a lot of fun to tag along with that team. And then as I was the trainer that goes to Saratoga, his other assistant stays in Belmont. So Tax became my mount, and he was a very tricky horse. And Danny and I had several disagreements about it, but, I mean, ultimately we did what was best for the horse. One of the disagreements is I have a little bit of an ego. I mean, a lot of assistants have a little bit of an ego. And I realized, like, he was not the kind of horse to play around with. He's a real racehorse. So I had to start taking him with a pony, and it kind of hurt my ego a little bit. But that was what was best for the horse. And then he went on and won the Jim Dandy for us. And that's the first graded race that I had ever won where I was the assistant and the rider of the horse.
It's always great to win a race, any race. It doesn't matter if it's a maiden claiming race or the Kentucky Derby. And there might be different levels of enthusiasm with those, but the feeling of winning any horse race is exceptional, and it goes to another level. When you win a graded stake like the Jim Dandy, and you mentioned what Tax meant to you and that relationship, was it different than winning your first race? Was there a different feeling to winning a graded stakes race, or is it different when you're out on your own and you win your first race?
You know what's funny? Winning the graded stake was more like, look, all my hard work, it paid off. I mean, that horse was really tricky in all aspects of his life, not just on the track. He was tricky in the stable. He was just tricky. So it was gratifying that I could get him there. When we won our first race with Survey, I mean, it was just a feeling of, a reassurance, like that I knew that I was doing the right thing, that this was the path that I was destined to go down, and that I had to, it was the right move for me to go out on my own. It just let me know that I'm supposed to be there.
Yeah, it's more of a vindication type of thing, right? Knowing that your approach and that the way you got that horse ready and the decisions you made, that you can do it, right? You can make this work. Is that the right way to put it?
Absolutely. That's exactly how it feels.
Yeah. Rachel Keithan is my special guest here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. We are coming up on a break, Rachel, in just about 3 minutes or so. We'll continue with the second half of the program after that and look back on some of the other horses that have meant so much to you and continue to talk about your background. But earlier you talked about the fact that you went from riding horses at five and then riding show jumpers, and then eventually went on to college and thought about, okay, getting an office job, but the racetrack, the lure of being around horses was just too much. You had to be around it. If you weren't training, what else do you think you might be doing if you weren't in this business?
Well, when I had taken a break from being an assistant, I just needed a break in general. It's very demanding. Racehorses in general are very demanding. You eat, sleep, and breathe them, and I had to take a break. So I was exercise riding for a little bit, and the last job that I had, I was working for Don Chatlos, who just took a racing manager position for OXO Equine, and he was still teaching me things, and I probably would have stayed with him. I would have stayed as an exercise rider. I had a lot of fun with him, and he taught me things on a daily basis. He was a great person to be around, and it was fun and uplifting to have a boss who didn't always scream at you. He just would kind of talk through things with you, but he loved the game. So I probably would have just done what I was doing, continue being an exercise rider. I did a lot of things before I decided to pick up some horses and start training. I probably would have. I might have stayed in New York because that's where a lot of my family is, racetrack family and relatives. But Kentucky is kind of calling for me, so I probably would have done Kentucky and New York if I hadn't gone on to training. And now that I've got a barn full of horses, Ocala just seems to be more breaking-oriented.
Yeah, it seems like a perfect fit for Rachel Keithan here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Going to get to a short break. We will continue this visit in the second half of the program. Stay with us. It is Trainer Talk, and it's all presented by Fasig Tipton. Fasig Tipton is bringing the heat to Miami with the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale of selected two-year-olds in training. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale will be held on March 31st after the Florida Derby over Gulfstream Park's dirt racetrack. The sale has a history of producing the sport's very best horses, including last year's Grade 1 Arkansas Derby winner Nadal, as well as top horses Bella Fina, Dona Veloce, Yapin, and Share the Ride. You will find no higher concentration of quality in any two-year-old sale in 2021. The Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 31st at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be?
Mr. Monomoy is bringing his speed and outstanding pedigree to the state of New York. Mr. Monomoy broke his mane in his second start at 2, running 6.5 furlongs wire to wire, winning by 5.5 lengths. Prepping for the Kentucky Derby, he won the historic Grade 2 Mile and an Eighth Risen Star at Fairgrounds by 2.5 lengths. Mr. Monomoy's half-sister, Monomoy Girl, is a twice Breeders' Cup Distaff winner and a double Eclipse Award champion. Other stallions that are half-brothers to two-time champions include leading sires Kozan and Into Mischief. Mr. Monomoy has the impressive looks to complement his race record and pedigree. Book your mare today to the next stallion that has all the momentum to be a perennial leading sire in the state of New York.
Make Woodbine the place to train and race your thoroughbred in 2021. Take advantage of competitive purse structures with huge bonuses for Ontario breds and a Woodbine backstretch equipped with a 1 mile dirt training track, a 7 furlong turf training track, a 2 furlong sand ring, and a 1/2 mile European jogging path. Racing surfaces include a 1 mile all-weather Tapeta main track, a 7 furlong inner turf course, and the 1.5 mile E.P. Taylor turf course. Opening day is April 17th. Follow us at Woodbine TV on social media and reach out to our team at woodbine.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Survey is full of run and awaits racing room toward the rail, and the complexion changes as they turn for home. Must be a monster still there. Survey,
shoots through a gap toward the rail and runs at the leaders. Here's It's My Lucky Summer from absolutely nowhere down along the inner rail. Inside the final furlong, Survey and Jesus Castanon. They have the lead down by 2.5. It's My Lucky Summer is their second. It's Survey. Throttle down at the end to win it by 3. It's My Lucky Summer is their second. Sweet Giant up on the outside third.
Richard Grunder with the call of that maiden claiming race at Tampa Bay Downs back on January 27th. You might say, okay, it's a maiden claiming race. What's the big deal? Well, it was a huge deal to my special guest, Rachel Keithan, here on Trainer Talk. She picked up her very first career win when Survey crossed the finish line first. The official margin of victory, 4 lengths under Jesus Castanon. We will talk more about that moment when Survey crossed the finish line. But want to remind you that if you did miss any portion of this show, all you have to do is go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the entire show and all of our Trainer Talk shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. And you can also follow us on social media, at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook and on Instagram. Well, Rachel, that call of Survey winning had to bring back some amazing memories for you. How many times have you gone back and watched the replay of that race?
About 25.
That's actually low. I thought it might be higher than that.
No. You can't keep looking at the past. You've got to look towards the future.
Well, that's a pretty good one to look back on, though, and it's one that you're never going to forget. When Survey did cross the finish line in front and won convincingly, what was that moment like? Put me there with you.
Well, first I had to take a deep breath because I had stopped breathing. Just when you get really nervous and you don't want to jinx it, you just stop breathing for a little bit. So once he crossed the wire, my assistants and I, we hugged each other and I mean, we were overjoyed at what else you, I didn't even know how to explain how excited we were about this. It was huge, especially because, you know, Survey won so impressively. It wasn't just he grinded through it. He pulled away.
Yeah, and it wasn't unexpected that he would run well. He went off at odds of 7-2. So you expected that, okay, there's a chance this could happen today. Had you even thought about it before you ended up winning your first race as to what it might be like if we can get it out of the way today and get this career kickstarted?
Honestly, no, I didn't think about it at all. I really just wanted to, you know, with a horse like that, you really just want to build up their confidence. And the first time out, for me, he ran a little bit further, and I just was hoping I'd made the right decision to cut him back a little bit. And obviously, we got him a little bit more fit in the time in between, and he just showed up. That's 100% of winning the race. Like, they can train like champions in the morning, and then the afternoon, they don't show up.
Yeah, he showed up in a big way, and he showed up under my man, Jesus Castanon. I don't know if you knew this, but Jesus actually worked as an analyst on one of our broadcasts. When we broadcast the Stephen Foster years ago at Churchill Downs, Jesus was my analyst when he was recovering from an injury, and we had so much fun doing it together. I love Jesus Castanon.
Wow, that's fantastic. I was not aware of that.
Yeah. Yeah, great guy. And I think one of the more underrated riders in the sport.
I'd agree with that. I actually met him in 2018 or 19 in Keeneland. He had come in my barn hoping to score a mount, and I said, I'm really sorry, I can't help you. I don't make those decisions. And I told him if I ever got a chance, you know, I'd give him a mount, and he just got lucky, got Survey.
Yeah, rewarded you in a big way for your loyalty and remembering him all those years later. Just a special moment, and a special moment for you and for your team, and it's really cool to see you off to a fast start. Rachel, what's the most difficult thing for a trainer to learn, I guess, or to have to deal with when they start going out on their own and doing this for themselves?
Well, I would say that the most difficult thing for me is going to be my vision. You have to look at a horse and have a vision for him. You have to have a plan. And it's really hard to take a horse that's unproven and decide what's their surface, what's their distance, you know, how do they want to be ridden? Do they want to go to the front? Do they want to be stalkers? That's really something that's hard to figure out with a horse that hasn't run before or they're unproven. So you have to figure out what's their running style so that both parts of the team can be successful. Personally, the horses that I've claimed in the past, they're a little bit easier to visualize what they want and what they need. You just got to keep them happy. An older horse, that's what I find the best. Is as long as you can keep them happy and fit, they're going to run for you.
You said earlier that you have a bit of an ego, and that would come into play when you were working with Danny Gargan, for example, as his assistant. Is it difficult for you to check that ego at the door and realize that each horse is an individual? And as you just said, you have to learn to teach them and deal with their own running styles and not force your training method on them, but let them kind of show you what they want to do. Can that be difficult?
Oh, absolutely. But I've been unsure already since I've gone out on my own. So I checked that ego at the door. I've got the coat check number and everything.
Yeah, I guess you have to, right? You can't be successful if you don't.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Rachel Keithan, my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. So what are the next steps now, Rachel? You got your first win under your belt. You have, what, 16 horses in your care, I think you said. What's the next steps now?
Well, the next step, we're going to make a couple more starts here at Tampa and see how it goes. I'd like to, if everything goes in my favor, which, knock on wood, things go different directions, I'm going to split the team up, and some are going to stay back here in Florida, and some are going to hopefully go on to Keeneland, the ones that I've got ready to go. And I hope to show up in a big way with some of these two-year-olds. And then from there, they're just going to tell me where they're going to run themselves. We've got a few Kentucky breds. We've got a few New York breds. There's a Pennsylvania bred. You know, you never really know what direction you're going to go where they run one best. It's all about the horses. Certain horses aren't going to take to certain tracks. And I just have to do what they're telling me I need to do. If I have to split the string up even further, then I have to split the string up even further. But the whole goal is success. It's not just they have to fit into where I want to go.
Are you a goal-oriented person, Rachel?
Absolutely. What would my day be if I didn't look forward to achieving the small goals that I set for myself?
What are some of the goals outside of winning races at a track like Keeneland, for example? As you just mentioned, you'll send some horses there, all things staying on track. But what are some of the goals you've set, immediate goals and then long-term goals for you and for your training career?
Ooh, okay, so immediate goals would have to be, I'd like to be in one of those first races at Keeneland with one of my two-year-olds. That's always been a goal for me. I started in Maryland with a two-year-old trainer who's very well-known. I started with the Salzman family, and they're known for prepping their two-year-olds and getting ready to run. I actually was with John Salzman Jr. when he had the Filly of the Year, Limited View, and we had her running as a two-year-old. So I would love to have one running under my name for the Keeneland meet. That's an immediate goal. That's what we're really focused on right now. Long-term goal, long-term goal, I'd like to have enough quality horses that I could pick pretty competitive spots and they're not exactly running on the bottom, that we've got a little bit of playroom with them. That's what I would like to do. And I'd like to be able to claim horses still. And I'd like a few babies every year. And I'd like some owners and I to take some win pictures.
It's interesting. The two words you didn't say when you were talking about your longer-term goals, Kentucky Derby. I didn't hear you say that.
No, I eventually I'll get there, but there's so many good grade one races. That's a really hard race to get into, and I understand that, but I'm not there yet. 5 years, maybe, but I prefer to. My goals change on a daily basis. I have to adapt to what I've got, and I have to keep looking into the future. What I've got in my barn right now, you know, they could always jump up and surprise me, but I'm not sure I've got any derby horses. I have more grass horses in my barn.
You know, you certainly don't lack in confidence, Rachel, and your enthusiasm for the sport comes through when people listen to you talk. If you do make it to one of those two-year-old races at Keeneland this spring, you walk into the paddock and you're going to be looking at Wesley Ward, Steve Asmussen, Todd Pletcher, Chad Brown. What's it like as somebody who's just getting started to walk in there and see those notable names and know that, hey, I got to beat these people to get to where I want to go?
Wesley Ward is my idol. I actually think about him every single day as I'm training. I worked for him a little bit. I rode for him a little bit in Saratoga this year, and I also rode for him a little bit in the farm in Florida. So he's who I aspire to be like.
What makes him so good?
He's got a feel for the horses himself. I've watched him. He's very patient. I've watched him. He likes to teach people how to ride. And one day there was one of the riders weren't necessarily getting along with one of the colts. And he said, hey, come over here. He had the kid get off the horse. He jumped on the horse, made the horse do exactly what he wanted to do. Then he got off. He gave the kid a leg back up and told him how to do it. And the horse went beautifully. Wesley he's got a great hand on a horse. And
yeah,
now
he was
that
a
he
fantastic
doesn't
rider.
All himself, he's got a good eye.
Yeah, he was a fantastic rider in his own right. So, you know, you couldn't be learning from somebody any better than Wesley Ward.
Oh, he's good. Yeah, absolutely.
Why do you think he's had so much success with, and as somebody like yourself who loves working with young horses, why has Wesley become known for his ability to get a two-year-old ready to run?
He does things different, very, very, very different. And I'm trying to copy him the best I can without exactly replicating him.
I think I'd be okay with replicating Wesley Ward.
I can't give away his secrets because then that would be giving away my secrets. But he does things a certain way, and everything that he does, it makes sense. So I myself am trying to do the same things that he does.
So what's the most important thing to keep in mind when you're working with these babies, getting them ready for their first start? What's the most important thing to keep in mind to get them ready to run first time out?
The most important thing that I'm thinking about right now, because unfortunately I don't have the great numbers that Chad has and that Steve Asmussen has, Todd Pletcher, they just have a lot more numbers than I have. If any of my horses tell me that they have to back off because I'm pushing them just a little bit too hard, then I have to listen. No matter what my brain is telling me, I have to listen to the horses. If they tell me they have to back off and they're not going to make a Keeneland race, you know, that's disappointing, but there's time. There's still time, and I'd rather have the horse last and want to run than to push them too hard and then they don't want to run.
Interesting stuff from Rachel Keithan, who is my special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. You think about where you are now, Rachel, and where you want to be, and all the different stuff we've talked about with idolizing Wesley Ward and working with young horses and all those types of things, and it will all come together. I have no doubt in my mind that this is all going to come together for you. Talk about some of the people that have supported you since you've gone out on your own, owners or other people that have come to you and helped you in any way.
Well, I mean, there's been an overwhelming support of people who'd like to help me out. But I've been a little bit stubborn in asking for help because, I have a little bit of an ego. Obviously, my assistant has been with me the entire step, the entire process, no matter how difficult I've been. She's been very supportive of me. I asked Danny Gargan to help me out, and, of course, he just sent me a ton of equipment. Without the equipment that he gave me, I mean, I don't know how I would have gotten started. And then since then, there's been others. Tom Proctor's also provided us with some equipment, and it's really helped out to get started. It's really expensive to get started. So just anything that anybody can do to help us, whether it's equipment, whether it's animals, whether it's advice, I'm just happy and very receptive of everything that everybody wants to kind of help us out with.
Really well said. And people don't realize that there is an expense that's involved with getting started that can be quite taxing on a young trainer when you have to invest in all the different equipment and different things that you need just to do your job on a daily basis. Eventually, you hope that your runners are running well and earning enough purses and you're making enough money to be able to compensate for all that. But at first, it can be a challenge. Do you see yourself one day, Rachel, I know you said you love the claiming game, but do you see yourself going to the Fasig Tipton sales, for example, and picking out young horses of your own that you can then take back and train and get ready?
Funny enough that you said that. We've got quite a few in the barn that I personally picked out. So I'm already to that step, and I hope to continue picking more.
What do you look for in a young horse when you're looking for the right fit?
I did 5 from the Fasig Tipton in Kentucky, in Lexington, and then I did 3 from the Fasig Tipton Timonium sale.
I know Fasig's going to be happy to hear that when they listen back to this show. You're a customer of Fasig Tipton and a guest on the show that they sponsor, so that all ties together nicely, Rachel. What do you look for in a young horse, a yearling, for example, or a two-year-old in training that tells you that you think they can really be a runner?
Well, personally, I always, right now, the goals will obviously change, but right now, my first year training, I really looked for horses that I thought could be sprinters. I have to get my name out there in a big way this year. Everybody's going to be really watching me and paying attention this year. As years go on, I can pick more of a classic horse. But right now, my goal was, I need something that's sprinty and fast and probably going to run as a two-year-old. So that was really what I was looking forward to when I went to the sales. Breeding's very important. I know a lot of people look at stallions and they say the stallion makes the horse, but to me, it's on the dam side. If there's no pedigree on the dam side where the dam has had several runners, or she herself was a runner, you know, I really don't feel like they'll be producing runners if they themselves were not runners or they've produced other runners. So the dam side's very, very important to me. And I'm looking for sprinters, so there's a certain body type that I'm looking for. I can look past a bunch of hair and dirt, and I can look past the fact that they may or may not be conditioned. I kind of know what direction they're going to go in. And so far with the ones that I've picked, they're all progressing and maturing into the animals that I thought they were going to be.
You know, I've talked to other trainers on this show over the years and talked to various bloodstock agents on some of our other shows. And one thing they always talk about is putting emphasis on a horse that looks like an athlete as opposed to getting so hung up on their pedigree. Do you agree with that approach too?
Yes, absolutely. But you know, as well as I know, that appearances aren't everything. Certain people put a little bit more time into conditioning these horses to bring them to the sale. And then when you get this horse, you bring it home, and after 30 days, they don't look like the same horse. So you've got to look past some of those things. And people also look for straight legs. And I'm going to be honest, I've been around quite a few Kitten's Joys. He's just the first stallion that comes up to mind. And I haven't seen one Kitten's Joy that's straight. And I saw one that was almost correct. And she didn't turn out to be very much horse. So the straight legs and there are certain things that you absolutely have to steer away from. But having their legs exactly straight, that's not a deterrent for me.
Yeah, interesting. And some of those, yeah, I mean, look at Kitten's Joy. I mean, the horse has been an unbelievable sire. And like you say, if the horses have little, you know, that's the other thing too, Rachel. I think a lot of people go to the sales and they're looking for that horse that, you know, goes through and vets well and scopes well and all these different things. The vet report has to be perfect. The confirmation has to be perfect. And if you can look past some of the little flaws, like you just pointed out, you can end up with a really good runner at a really reasonable price.
Absolutely. And it really takes a true horseman to be able to do that. There's very few people who are very successful at doing that. Because, as you said, they've got to be completely correct. And the people who are spending the money on these horses, you know, they want to know that they're not getting a damaged product, but there's certain things that you can overlook that they may grow out of. Another thing that people seem to forget that they're usually in a really funny growth stage when they go through these sales because they're at different times of the year. They could be perfectly correct, and then next week, you know, the legs are facing different directions, and then they get really butt high, and then they level out. They're in funny growth stage. So again, it's all about appearance, and good horsemen are able to just look through it.
Well, we're down to about the final 5 minutes of the program. It's been a really enjoyable visit here, Rachel, and I know we could spend another hour talking about different things pertaining to thoroughbred racing. Let's spend just a minute or two talking about your family. What does your family think of you being involved with racing?
They've been really, really supportive. My family, unfortunately, isn't into horse racing, but they support the fact that I'm into it and that I've worked my way up the ladder. I've done everything. I've hot walked for free. I've groomed for free. I've ridden for free. And then I just moved and progressed from there. They understand how hard I've worked for this, and they've been absolutely supportive the entire way. There's times where they don't speak to me once a month. I'm really busy, and they understand it. Very, very, very supportive. When Tax ran in the Kentucky Derby, my mom took a picture of the TV and sent me a picture of me on the TV. So it's been quite a roller coaster ride, but they're very, very, very supportive. And I hope that once COVID's over, they'll come to watch some of our races.
Well, a lot of times when a trainer comes on this show and says, you know, my parents were kind of suspect of me getting involved in training horses. They wanted me to go to college and get an education. You did that, Rachel, so they cannot complain about that. You went the college route first and then decided, hey, I want to be around horses. So I think that makes it a little bit easier.
Yes, absolutely. They're a little less objective.
All right, well, give me a couple of things you like to do outside of racing, other hobbies or interests that you have. I know you don't get a lot of time to do them, but things that you enjoy doing other than horse racing.
Ooh, that's tough. I like I said, I pretty much eat, sleep, and breathe horse racing. So that's a little bit difficult. I make time. Every week I make time to go play bingo. I love bingo.
Really?
I enjoy my winters in Florida where we play volleyball on the beach. Unfortunately, with my broken ankle, I can't really be a participant, but I can be a little fun cheerleader on the side. I like to just have a good time. I don't really say no to a lot of opportunities. If something pops up, I try to make time to do everything. I like to go boating with friends. I went to NASCAR this past weekend. I mean, if I can find time to do the little things with people that are important to me, I really feel like that fulfills the quality of life that I'm looking for, and that in turn makes the entire barn happier. Everybody needs their own personal time in order to make things happy and run right.
How'd you like the NASCAR race? That's a different kind of horsepower.
It was quite interesting. I have a friend who sponsors one of the cars, and we got there and we had a pit row passes, and we were watching the race. It was the third lap, there was an accident, and then in lap 14 or 15 there was a lightning. There was another accident, and then there was lightning in the area, and it completely poured down. So we didn't get to see very much, but it was a different kind of experience.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Rachel Keithan here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Rachel, again, been a delight to hear your story. Congratulations on that first career win. I know there's going to be many, many more to come, and all the best in accomplishing every goal that you've set for yourself. Good luck.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did too. And if you missed any portion of the show, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast. Follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and on Instagram. Now for my special guest, Rachel Keithan. For Lee Delapina, my producer, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Thanks for listening.